Thank you very much. Victoria, would you like just a quick roll call of who we have on the call today?
Yes, thank you.
Good morning, good afternoon to everyone. The recording has now started for the sub-team. We've got Olga Cavalli, Victoria McKevsey, Michael Young on this call. From staff, we have Glenda Saint-Géry, Julie Headland, myself, Gisela Gruber-White, and we do have apologies from Rafik and Claudio. Thank you.
Okay. Michael, I'll just give you a... We had decided to have an informal chat because we didn't know if we had enough to have a formal call, but now we've got you, we've got the recording and all that sort of thing. And we were just... I was just discussing with Olga some of her thoughts. As you know from the list, we are focusing just on the language of the recommendations, which I recirculated, just in order to...
They've broken out. I see them here, yeah.
Yeah, just in order to try and... You know, put aside some of the rhetoric and positional things, and look at precise issues and language, etc., to see to what extent we really do have issues of principle. Anyway, Olga has raised two issues, and we were just starting to discuss the first one. And her first issue was, and Olga can speak to them again if she'd like to. But the first one was the requirement for the publication of minutes, which arises here in a couple of contexts: executive committees, and constituency meetings.
Yeah.
So it arises in a couple of places. And the other one that Olga has raised, but like I said, we were only beginning to discuss these, was the open lists. So Olga, I'll just turn the whatever it is back to Olga, actually, because perhaps you'd like to... I think we were just trying to get to the heart of her concerns about why it was onerous to publish minutes in these contexts, and we'd already dealt with the fact that it probably isn't a staff issue because it's the constituencies themselves, so we were just trying to explore that.
I was just, if I may, Victoria, just when Michael joined the call, I was just sharing some experiences I have, not with ICANN, but with other bodies that I belong to, like Internet Society, our local chapter. I'm the secretary, and I must confess that now that I am the secretary, this issue with the minutes is in order, because I am quite ordered when I commit some of my time for something. But that's not the rule. Generally, what usually happens is that just minutes don't get on time published, just because people is volunteering time. And this, Michael, perhaps you can help us in understanding this, how this dynamic works in between a constituency within ICANN, because my experiences as a non-com appointee and from other bodies that I work with. And so my general comment was, this is all good. Is it feasible? I mean, is this feasible for the different constituencies? Are we requesting or setting rules that will be achieved, or just it's the desire and the reality, the daily life and the daily lack of time makes things really in reality be different? That's my question. And maybe you belonging to a constituency, like registry constituency, could give me your comment.
Well, you know, I actually have a fair bit of thinking about this, because we when we were doing our charter in the RYC, well, our charter that was supposed to be and is for actually the new stakeholders group, we went back and forth on what would be effective in terms of commitments in regards to public transparency and publishing what we do and what we're discussing and so forth. And we struggled between setting policies or setting rules voluntarily in our own charter at that point in time, to demonstrate a willingness to disclose and be open and transparent about what we're doing, versus actually something that would practically work and not be worked around. See, when the rules for transparency and discussion are overt, what happens is that you end up getting, in my opinion anyways, and from my observations, both in ICANN and other groups I've worked in, is you end up getting a bunch of sidelong, unofficial conversations by phone, by personal email, and people keep key decisions and negotiations, frankly, off these formal lists, because everything is so public. You can't offer a honest opinion without someone twisting it, often violently, on you outside the group. Fortunately, a place like ICANN, frankly, attracts a lot of fringe zealots that seem to have less of an interest in, you know, improving the internet for the greater good, and more of a personal interest of almost, you know, occupying themselves and lurking and looking for controversy as a form of amusement. There are some folks that we've seen around at the different meetings that appear to behave that way. And so we were struggling back and forth. How do you, for those people with good working intentions, how do you keep them informed, but how do you not make the rules or the conditions so onerous that people try to work around them, right? So what we came up with in our own charter that I think was effective, and I'm reading this, Victoria, quick question for you. This is meant to apply to interest groups as well, is it, at this point?
Well, it is inherent to the structure of this, that it's right at the end of the it says, and X, Y, and Z shall apply to stakeholder groups, because I do think that we need to think through carefully. I mean, I'm not familiar with the stakeholder groups yet. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm really thinking in a constituency way, because I've been in two of them and I understand how constituencies work as a rank and file member and not as a leadership member. You know, and
right.
I think that's part of the distinction between my perspective and that of Tony and Chuck's, who have been probably deeply involved in the leadership. And, you know, so I'm very much someone who feels frustrated and in the dark constantly in those scenarios. So,
right.
But I think we do need to stop. So even if we think this, so what I've done, just because it was from my experience, is try and think these things through from a constituency level. And I've said at the end, then we should rethink them through from an interested, from a stakeholder group point of view.
Okay.
Because
but
there may be slightly different considerations there, and I don't want to, you know, apply such a broad brush. We can't reach consensus on any of it. But
there are three names here we're talking about, just to clarify now, because I forget the name of the group that's the advisory group for the recommendations, the board recommendations. Olga, what's their name now?
I don't recall it, but
you know what I mean.
It come to my mind. Yes, I know.
Yeah, so they went over the charters and they made some suggestions.
Oh, the Board Governance Committee?
Thank you.
The Board Governance Committee.
Right.
So the Board Governance Committee went over and they suggested that for the contracted side of the house on the GNSO, we scratch the term constituency and we change it to interest group. And that's because constituency on the contracted side of the house anyways requires a contract, right? For membership.
Yeah, I'm aware of the terminology, but I think it would be dangerous to substitute the word constituency here.
Well, I'm wondering if we shouldn't add both interest group and constituency, because they're supposed to be the equivalent, really. You know, one's on the contracted side of the house and one's on the non-contracted side of the house, right? And they were the same term until someone, you know, decided, and I think wisely, to change that. Just to differentiate the fact that, you know, it requires another significant precedent to membership, and the other one is.
I'd like to have a look at. I hear you. I'd like to have a look at the documentation for that, because I mean, are there charters for the interested parties? Because if they're not, that's a very whole different equation that we're talking about. If that's a loose gathering that's not in any way formalised, then
it's expected to have charters just like
right.
the constituencies. Yeah.
Well, perhaps we should just footnote that. But until they do have charters and look something like constituencies, I'm not sure that that's going to be helpful to the analysis. But I mean, you know, yes, we could. I take your point. And we should footnote that, but I mean, you know what I mean. But it's a little premature if they kind of haven't been formed.
Right. Well, I mean, technically, I guess nothing's been formed under this new structure so much yet, because the new council hasn't been seated. But
the constituencies all have recertified and submitted new charters and amended their charters
right,
and stuff, input on their charters. And, I mean, the interested parties don't exist yet until they've got a charter. And we don't know what they'll look like when they do start trying to come up with a charter. And they may never do that, because actually I don't think there's any need for anyone to do so. So, I mean, it's purely theoretical. But, I mean, let's footnote it, and I take that point. But they're not entities yet. And also, I think there's some room for discussion, or there's some room for movement. They may end up being things that look quite different from constituencies, because they might be something a bit more like birds of a feather group. So I don't know, or you know what I mean, mightn't they? There might be more factions than constituency, you know, than something like a constituency. But
well, you know, that's actually a good term, and I would have to agree to some. I would have to agree that that's how they'll probably tend to form up, right?
Yeah.
You know, similar interests, similar motivations. I almost look at them as a type of as a voting block, if you will, within a stakeholders group.
Yeah.
You know.
And certainly, I mean, that's right. I mean, I know, because you sort of said before, and I mean, I know that, I mean, no one's quite clear about the entire new picture of how it's operating, but with the transitional charters in the non-contracted house, the power is utterly residing with constituencies, the votes are residing with constituencies, and so at the end of the day, you know, this is very much drafted from the point of view of these known quantities who actually will retain the real power in the GNSO until we see new charters maybe in a year or so.
Right. So let me just go over and make it really clear, because I mean I understand on the contracted party side of the house, I fully understand how the registries have organized themselves, and the registrars are a little bit different. But I've been going through their charter really, and I need to have a conversation with a few of them to really understand it a bit better. But for our in our vision, anyways, just as a point of comparison. We left the voting power with the members of the stakeholders group at all times. So they could have gone off and formed prior. They were supposed to form constituencies, but now it's interest groups. But they could go form off factional groups and organize themselves with a charter, and they could choose to have a spokesperson and so forth if they want to. It's all valid. But when it comes to actually voting, and applying, you know, voting for our GNSO seat representation or telling our counselors how to go on a motion, it's actually the individual members exercise their vote regardless of what interest groups they choose to participate in, right? And we did that just so that at the end of the day,
in the stakeholder group, you mean?
Yeah. Because it was easy for us to form it that way, because a precondition of being part of any of the interest groups underneath the stakeholders group was that you had to be eligible for membership in the stakeholders group in the first place. In other words, have a contract with ICANN.
Mm.
So we were able to simplify the structure for that.
I mean, like I say, I'm very skeptical as to whether there will be interested parties that will choose to formally organize. So I don't think that should stop constituency reform. Look, until constituencies look like they're going to become less relevant, and that's not looking like it's going to be the case.
Well, the RYC will no longer refer to itself as a constituency after the new council is seated. We'll refer to ourselves as stakeholder group.
But I'm talking about, for example, the IPC and the business constituencies and the NCUC, right? I mean, they are alive and well, going nowhere.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? I apologize for that, but I think we need to footnote that. And I mean, to be honest, my own preference would be, if anything, to carve out interested parties until we see them and know what they look like. And I don't think it would be really necessarily the best thing to try and in any way suggest rules for things that I don't think are going to resemble constituencies or behave like them or have the significance.
Okay, well, we could put that in a footnote and just say, you know, we're aware that there was a recommendation to change the language from constituency to interest group on the contracted side of the house. And since we haven't had specific guidance on what an interest group is versus a constituency, and, you know, our base assumption is that it's, you know, likely to be much the same thing, intended to be much the same thing, with the exception of requiring a contract, the contract inside of the house. You know, could we have clarification on that? I do think your point.
Well,
is
I think only. Yeah. Well, I mean, who would clarify that? I mean, until they do organize, will we? I don't know if anyone can tell us until. But the proof will be in the.
Well, I mean, they put out a huge description of what they expect a stakeholders group to be. So why can't they do the same thing for, why can't they clarify interest groups?
Well, right. I would have thought, I mean, I don't know, but I would have thought they'd want some sort of bottom-up process. Like, they'd want to have a look at what people were proposing. But look, I'm sure we can footnote that in a way that's happy, you know, that makes everyone happy, and I think it's the way to go.
Can we go back to the mailing list for a second?
Wait, no, we're on minutes. We haven't got a mailing list.
Sorry. minutes, I was kind of lumping minutes and mailing lists.
No, they're quite, I don't think they're remotely similar, and I think we should start with minutes, and it's a, you know, it's a really basic thing about organizations and committees, and, you know, I think we need to give it its due time. I mean, I think, you know, if people think longer, I've already changed the recommendation to 72 hours. If it's a time thing.
I think minutes are fine. I think you're going to get a little bit of interpretation of what's adequate. I don't think we can. I mean, I throw my hands up in the air at that because I don't think we're ever going to get consensus on what's, you know, adequate for minutes. I think we just have to kind of leave that for the groups to work through, and their memberships will object, I guess, if they don't feel the minutes are sufficient. I think 72 hours is kind of the minimum period we have to leave for people, given that in the constituencies anyways, there's no guarantee of staff support. I mean, we've been very lucky in that we've been able to fund some assistance from Sherry in our group, Sherry Stubbs, and that's worked out very well for us. We've been very fortunate, and they in some ways so reliable and to help us, so our minutes come out relatively quickly as a result. But I know a lot of the other groups, it's just, you know, they take turns, and it's whoever's on the call, and, you know, it's going to be a challenge for them, for sure.
Yeah.
You know. And so I think especially constituencies on the non-contracted side of the house may not collect fees or anything to deal with the administrative side of their group, you know. Because
We pay fees. And
but
certainly
you don't
enough
think
to
you can
do
count
base.
On that, right?
It's certainly enough to do basic. Well, I mean, they've got the option to charge fees, and it's pretty basic to do some minutes, I think. I mean, as you say, I think that's a very good point you make about adequacy. But, I mean, you know, it needs to be, you know, recording the decisions taken. You know, it doesn't have to record the discussions, you know. So, you know, the action points alone will be minutes, right? I mean, it's not really that.
Do we want to try and introduce then, like, kind of a minimum expectation of minutes? Minutes are at a minimum, you know, clarification of decision points made and resolutions.
Do you think that would be helpful?
I think it would be.
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
I agree.
So decisions, resolutions, and action points.
Yeah.
Yep.
Can I ask a stupid question? Could some groups say, or interest group or constituencies say that they just don't want to 2 minutes? I don't know if this is possible or...
Well, I think that's what we're trying to guard against with this.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
I think we're setting down minimums, aren't we? We're setting down really basic minimums, and quite frankly, I think decisions, resolutions, or action points is it should be an acceptable minimum. I mean...
No, I agree. I mean, I totally agree that there should be minutes, and they should be at least in 72 hours. I'm just talking about what reality is in different groups, interest groups.
Well, we're looking.
I'm sure
the IPC is full of lawyers, and you know, we're perfectly capable of doing minutes. I'm sure the business constituency and also the NCUC again is full of lawyers and law professors. I mean, you know, this is who we're actually talking about, and they're certainly, you know, the leadership and the executive and what have you. And you know, they're very highly educated, sophisticated people. So I don't think that this is a huge, you know, even the parish, you know, even your parish council, if you have one, they do minutes. You know?
Perfect. No, I totally agree.
Sorry, this is Glenn. Just to add in, because some of you might not know, some of the constituencies do have secretariats, like, as Michael has said, the registries, and the business constituency has a secretariat, and the ISP constituency has a secretariat. I cannot speak for the IPC, which you probably can, and the NCUC, as far as I know, don't have, but they have in the past asked to have a secretary.
Thanks, Glenn. That's very helpful to know. Are they ICANN secretariats, or they've got made their own private arrangements?
And they've made their own private arrangements. I know the BC, the business constituency, pays for their secretariat from the funds that they collect, the fees that I collect for being a member of the business constituency. And I think that the ISPs do the same thing.
Right, that's actually.
And I know the registrar, they've got somebody who writes their papers for them. Clark Walton.
Very sensible.
Which is very useful because, you know, their contributions come in on time.
Mm-hmm.
And constituency members play the role of secretariat because I have to do with them during the meetings, for example, the big ICANN meetings.
Okay, that's really helpful to know. And also, you know, for those organisations, you know, for those constituencies who really are comfortable with transparency, I mean, you know, it's very cheap and easy to stick up a recording if they're comfortable with that level of disclosure, isn't it? You know, that's the cheapest, probably cheapest and easiest option because of the technology so accessible and affordable. But anyway, does anyone else have any comments on minutes? Julie, did you have something you wanted to add?
Yeah, thank you, Victoria. I don't have any particular comments. I do like the idea, however, of having some kind of a bare minimum definition, and you know, ideally, something basic enough that if a particular constituency is you know constrained for resources and you know and wants to you know. Understand how much they have to do to meet this guideline. That I think that's very helpful.
Great, thank you. Okay, should we go on to communications or open mailing lists then, which was Olga's second point. Olga, do you want to just talk to us about your thoughts
yeah,
on that?
My experience is that sometimes when the lists are quite open, they are captured by some participants. So this it really is discouraging for people that really want to make relevant comments sometimes when it's necessary and not all the time about anything. So the list loses interest for many people and it just doesn't make sense. That's my experience with some groups and I know that some caucuses and some I don't know constituencies in ICANN, but some other interest groups have this problem. So my question is, should they be really open? I know that for the sake of transparency, that is good, but sometimes in practical issues, it's a burden. It becomes captured by two or three activists, and it brings some problems. So my experience with, for example, with Internet Society is that We have two lists, one for the whole all the members of the chapter, which is quite open, and there are some general communications. But then there is one more restricted list that it's for the board and for other members of the chapter. And so some decisions are discussed in that shorter list. But it's only an example that I wanted to bring about the capturing that I have seen sometimes, and it's quite it's quite bad for people that really want to participate with relevant comments.
I have to agree with what Olga is saying there. I mean, that's what we struggled with when we were discussing this back and forth, and then there's also an administrative burden on a more public list to, frankly, make sure you don't get hacks on there saying derogatory or racist or personal attacks. And there's quite a bit of work involved in that. What we resolved we would do, and we haven't finalized this, but this is where the discussion is going in our group, is create a public submission mechanism. So we'd publish our minutes, you know, resolutions, decisions, and so forth, on the wiki, our maintained wiki, so people know what we're up to. And if they want to comment, they'll have a public submission mechanism. So anybody in the open community can come in and have a place where they can post their thoughts or their comments on anything we've posted that we plan to do or that we intend to, if we've resolved. That we felt was a little bit more maintainable. And then we also have a working list, of course, that the members of the actual constituency or stakeholders group, in our case now, can go back and forth. But that's not, that's obviously public within the working group membership, the constituency membership, but not public to the general public. And that was the compromise we came up with, and it seems to me it'd be a practical and realistic approach.
Right. Well, the only thing is that I'm not sure if anyone's focused on this, but this isn't even one of my recommendations. This is one of the board governance committee's minimums.
Yeah.
Must observe.
And
I have to say, looking at all the other examples, well, I don't know, maybe you can tell me in practice what happens, but if you look at, ITFL or whatever it is, international, it's the one that you're involved in, Michael. What is it called?
Oh, the IETF?
Yeah. Everything's open, isn't it?
On the Internet Engineering Task Force, but then... that's mitigated by an extreme harshness in administration of those lists. Like, people are frankly very rude and very nasty on those mailing lists. If you get on a mailing list with the ITF and you start spouting a position versus a technical argument, you'll get thrown off the list almost immediately. If you're in a meeting and you stand up and you comment on something and you haven't read the relevant document thoroughly and can demonstrate that, people will literally say, shut up and sit down. They'll say that. And so that has, other mitigating capabilities that would not be diplomatically acceptable in ICANN. So
do you
that's
think,
why that works.
Okay. All right. Look, what I'm wondering is, remember the Board Governance Committee came up with this pre-stakeholder groups? I mean, the report was originally pre the stakeholder groups.
Yeah.
Was it not? I mean, do you think that there might be a case for... I think in some ways the principle is important because, the lack of transparency is a real... Everyone's saying lack of basic transparency. All the three reviewers are complaining about it, and it is true. And this is a major contributor and also sets the tone, I think. So, we do need to, really... take some time with them. It's an important one. But is there a room for a distinction between constituencies and stakeholder groups? Although I say that do you think maybe it's more important that the stakeholder groups have open lists and the constituencies could, in that sense, have?
I think they're kind of equal in that regard. I mean, one is in a way just a subset of the other. So I don't see that they're. I'm not really distinguishing a whole lot between, what's good for the goose is good for the gander kind of thing here in this situation. I think if I was to phrase a recommendation around this, I would almost say that, try not to define the mechanism, but say that, both constituencies and stakeholder groups should be providing a mechanism for the open public to understand what's going on. In other words, publish your minutes, publish your resolutions and your decisions, maybe publish your MP3s if you want to go that far. But you should be publishing what you're up to and your decision making, and then you should also be providing a mechanism for people to respond to that, regardless
of
what that is.
Yeah. I'm not sure that we actually have, like I say, it's a minimum and they're quite precise. Mailing and discussion list should be open and publicly archived with posting rights limited to members. And I think that partly addresses your concern about, you're not going to have hate speech from members of constituencies because they can be subject to, obviously, to expulsion, et cetera.
Sure. But how do people then guarantee they have a right to voice their thoughts and their opinion? That kind of leaves a hole open in my mind.
No, but it's not about that. It's not. Maybe we need to look at this one further. I think it's a really important issue. But I mean, it's not about it's not about giving the public the right to post. I mean, they have other. There are general ICANN lists anyway, aren't there, for the public to, most policy goes out for public submission, doesn't it? Public comment. But
well,
I mean,
yeah. But not every.
General list, there's a GA list, or what is it called?
Yeah, there's a GA list.
So, I mean, there's already one public. So the public can post, comments in the GA list, but this is about, the fact that, at the end of the day, the way I look at this is the whole thing is, you know, constituencies are not supposed to be little private clubs that operate in secret, which is actually, I'm afraid, what is happening. This is really to prize them open and render them transparent, because they're only in existence, you know, by privilege, i.e. their charter was a privilege granted by the board, you know, and they're supposed to be, you know, collections of people with similar interests to participate in ICANN in a transparent and open way. So we may have to go and look further at some of the base reports, but this doesn't seem like, based on it's a minimum guideline, so I'm not even sure that we have the right to try and...
Well, interestingly enough, the board recommendation, the board governance committee that was looking at our charter, we thought they might say something, because we did not in our charter say that we would publish our mailing list openly as per this minimum requirement, but we said we would convey what was going on publicly, and we made some general terms, and they didn't blink an eye at it. I was surprised, but I think, you know,
that's not the final process, is it? None of these, you know, that's not necessarily dealing with our work, is it? Were basic minimums.
No, they're, that's true, but you know, I rather think that this statement was a bit of a mistake. I think it's too constrained to the medium. I mean, why define the medium? Why not define the goal? And this is the definition of a medium. What if, you know, 5 years from now, nobody's using mailing lists? We're using another mechanism. Then that means you've got to get out of jail card free, because this was too specified, right? So I'm reading it with the intent, deliberately reading it for its intent, not for its specificity. Sorry. I have a bit of a speech impediment that crops up sometimes. It's hard for me to say that word.
I don't think that, I don't know how we would manage to craft something that would ever come up with basic, we've met quite a lot of resistance generally about making constituencies suggesting real change in their practices. So how would we ever craft something to try and, you know, it was proposed as an intendedly, I think, fairly drastic step, which would have brought a sea change to the way of operating. How would we craft something that would ever get to adequacy? You know, how would we...
Well, one of the things that we do, because I have to go back to our, you know, my own experiences that I think is effective, is when we publish a comment document as a group, we also publish, you know, how the group weighed in on it. So if we have a supermajority but a minority opinion, the minority opinion gets published as well. Regardless of, you know, frankly, member, right?
But I think that's slightly another recommendation. Their next basic guideline was procedures for developing policy positions publicly about how many participants, et cetera. I mean, that kind of practice is picked up elsewhere and is slightly a different point. I mean, these are the main...
But it's kind of related to this issue, right? Like, you know, transparency, openness, what's the group doing? What's the group really up to, right? You know,
they're making a distinction between policy and general business. I mean, the lists. What do the lists and mailing and discussion lists do? That's your general business forum.
Well, I mean, you know, what happens on the list, at least in our list, sometimes is some robust debate, and sometimes people, to make their point, will cite examples that they're comfortable with the group, because it's a known. Like, for example, you're just talking to another registry company, so you know they understand what you're talking about. You don't have to do 16 paragraphs of context to make sure that something's not misunderstood or taken the wrong way. And, you know, if that were to be published just openly, you'd have to couch your language so carefully, because the next thing you know, because it's a public list, you know, some reporter is going to be lifting it and putting it in an article out of context. And you're going to, you know, anything that you put down to this list, you're going to have to pass through your PR department. I mean, it just gets very hairy and very difficult to have an honest, you know, discussion about things.
So why do you think the Board Governance Committee recommended it? And why do you think, like, the IETF do it, and don't they have the same concern?
No, the IETF don't really talk about policy, per se. They stay off that topic. So it really is a bunch of, you know, excuse my language, but bit heads arguing about, you know, the best thing from a technical perspective. And, you know, sometimes, frankly, they say some pretty ludicrous and outrageous things. But companies, you know, these are tend to be, people in that group tend to be more the mad geniuses of companies, so they tolerate that in that space, and they realize it's part of their creative process. It's kind of a different thing. And like I said, the people managing the groups are quite vigilant and will slap people down in a way that you'd never ever see in a more diplomatic environment. So it's not as difficult to manage. Although, you know, troll through those lists, you'll see some things that sometimes you can't believe that somebody said it. Now, in this environment, though, I mean, anything that you say could, you know, it's almost, you know, a whole different arena, because anything that you say or argue, if it's taken out of context, could result in policy going in a direction that, you know, the organization that you're representing or the interest group you're representing or whatever is not happy with, and it can cause a world of trouble. So, you know, now you're going to end up having a hard time getting down to a good debate. I mean, you think things are very quiet in some of these groups already. People are very, very, very couched in what they say and very cautious quite often. And it seems to me like it's one extreme or another. You know, there's not very many people down the middle. Chuck's a wonderful example of that. Chuck will weigh in on almost everything he's asked to. I think that's kind of the exception. And that someone can kind of balance, you know, public-facing concerns and also, you know, have a robust debate about something. So, you know, what can I say? I think if you make things too public, what you'll get is comments that are debate that is not really debate. You know, it's stuff that's vetted by people's PR departments, and really we're not going to end up with improved decisions.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I mean, there's no debate. There's almost zero debate on any of the lists. I don't know if there are other lists, but I can tell you already in the NCUC, well, that's not quite so bad, but certainly in the IPC, there's almost zero debate on anything. There's almost no commentary.
Really? Okay.
No. I mean, so they're already there, and that's not they're already there. Basically,
wow.
Stuff comes in, you don't know what's going on, you don't know who's dealing with it, then, you know, all you'll see is a final position paper, and you'll have 2 days to respond, and no one says a word. A couple of people say, oh, that's great, or what have you. So where the discussion's going on, I don't know, but it certainly isn't in the IPC.
Okay.
So I don't know what's happening in other constituencies. I've only got the experience of those two. I think the NCUC is better, although maybe I wasn't on the right list because I never saw any of the discussion there either. So I wonder...
It's off list, basically.
Yeah. Exactly. So the very thing that you're worried about, I would say, is already a problem. You know, it wouldn't make any difference.
Well, the contracted side of the house, both the registrars and the registries actively use their list. I can tell you that. And I do see the working groups I've participated in around ICANN seem to use their list pretty actively. I can't, like, you know, this is news to me, so I'm sorry that the other side of the house basically is not doing that debate. But I would hate in the groups that are being quite, you know, open and debating in a healthy way to have improved decisions, I'd hate to shut them down, you know.
Well, do you think we should, it strikes me that this should go back to the Board Governance Committee for clarification.
That's
maybe
a good idea.
Maybe setting out the concerns. Maybe we should just, you know, write to them and ask them very polite, you know, say this is what we're worried about, you know, what did you really mean, you know, here are the pros and cons.
Is it intense, or is it, you know, or do you want to be this specific? Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea, I think.
If you have a suggestion about some other minimum, then we could look at putting the language to them. But it was one of theirs, and I think that, you know, there's been a lot of money spent getting to the point of their report, right, with the LEC and what was his name, Shari, and there's another one as well. So, you know what I mean? It was a culmination of an enormous process and no doubt large sums of money. So if they've come back and this is one of their four minimums here, oh, hang on. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 minimums or something. You know, I don't think we should just be throwing that away without asking for clarification.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good idea. Olga, how do you feel?
Hold on a second, please, because my phone is ringing. Yeah, I totally agree with you, and I think that the experience of Michael is very interesting. This is why, Victoria, I think that comments from constituencies has a lot of value. It's not that I think they are more important than other comments, but I think it adds experience from the dynamic of the different groups. And if we don't respect this dynamic that is already existing, we will lose perspective and we will propose things that will not be feasible.
I mean, I have to say, I take the first part of what you say. I have to say, I'm a little skeptical about the constituencies are quite happy. Certainly, the ones I have money with, they're quite happy operating exactly as they are. And they're going to have to be forced to change because they've ignored all the reports. You know, and there have been some changes, but nothing substantial, I don't think. So, there's no point. It is a bottom-up process, and if we can reach consensus, you know, all the better. So we can work on that. Now, listen, so that's minutes and communications. Olga, did you have any other thoughts?
No, in general, my concern was with the open list and with the minutes, not because I don't think they are necessary, but just in practical, I think that sometimes just people don't do them. But no, in general, those were my comments.
Okay. Michael, was there anything in particular on this call? I know we're only having a truncated call, so it won't be the last opportunity, and there's the list as well. But was there anything else you wanted to talk through while there's the three of us?
No, I think that was really, you know, what we covered was kind of what I thought was the tougher part, you know, because like you said, it is in the minimum list. And, you know, I thought it was just, I think it's short-sighted the way it's phrased, and I can't imagine that's what they meant. I think they just got, you know, sometimes when people have a good idea or good intent, they turn around and try to almost execute it in their articulation of their intent. And
that's a good point. I'm just wondering, I mean, it was supposed, do you think that, I'm just wondering, I'm just looking at that language, do you think they meant committees as well, or do you think that would be the way that a constituency could have, or an interest group could have privacy while formulating policy, but then is that a bit of an effort to make them form a committee? Because if we're only making, if you think about these two together, you know, if it's only action points, decisions and resolutions, and, you know, basically got Chatham House rules then while under discussion, and if committees can have closed lists, would that, do you think, deal with some of the sting of it?
Well, I mean, it could, except then, you know, within the group sometimes you're going to end up with some political problems, aren't you? Because I think what you're going to have is, because everyone wants to make sure they know what's going on, even if they don't want to contribute. You're going to end up with committees of like 30 people because they just want to be able to keep their thumb on what's going on.
True.
You know, and only three people are going to be doing the real work. Right now in our group, it works very well. I mean, a typical, we call them working groups usually, but it's a committee. And, you know, usually it's maybe three, four people on average. Sometimes if it's a really dicey, interesting subject, you might get 5 to 7. That's at the outside.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
that's normal. Yes, that's pretty usual. Yeah.
You know, and I think you'd end up having, you know, everyone in the constituency putting their hand up just so that they get fed the information.
Yeah, that's if you knew there was a committee.
Well, then that's another problem.
That's another problem. You don't even know what committees there are, you know, or what they're doing, and blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Blah. Anyway. Okay. Well, look, I think that's pretty helpful. I mean, we just have to. What I'll try and do is, I can just recirculate that amended, I'm happy to do it. Have a first go at a clarification to the Board Governance Committee. But Michael, I hope that you would input to the language and help me draft that. And then I'm just going to recirculate this again and try and explain to everyone what our discussion. Well, we're recording, so they can listen to the recording. But I'll just try and summarise what we've discussed and where we've got to, and then really call again for other comments and raise the possibility of another call. You know, perhaps maybe after our call on Friday.
Yeah.
For the people who missed it.
That's a great idea. Also, I would suggest, Victoria, that you stress in your email, and if you want, after you send yours, I can send another, to receive comments from our sub-working team, because we all agreed that sub-working teams should have some feedback from the different draft parts of our final outcome. And the idea, I think, on Friday is to see how we are going to, how a level of agreement we have in the sub-working teams and how we move forward. On Thursday, I have the GNSO conference call, so maybe if at the same time, I think it would collapse with my GNSO teleconference. So, but just check perhaps with the Doodle if the other people is available. I'm not sure that with 4 days in advance they will manage to participate. That's just a suggestion, but we can try anyway.
Great. Okay, thanks, Olga. Thank you. Thank you, Julie and Giselle and Glenn. I hope that's how you pronounce it, Giselle. Is it Giselle?
Gisela.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No problem. I have to struggle with your surname.
Yeah, everyone does. Okay, look, thank you very much, everyone.
And
thank you, Victoria.
Talk to you on Friday. Bye-bye.
Thank you very much, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.